If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Ruth Norbury is a Swansea-based hand embroidery artist whose Gothic Decay needlework pieces present solitude in a desolate environment. Ruth's work is haunting. They are pieces that have a post-apocalyptic feel to them, and yet they've got painstaking beauty built in to the work. This is the first part of my conversation with Ruth. As you might guess, I thoroughly enjoyed chatting with her. One of the things I love about Ruth is that she started stitching at a young age, about 5, and fell in love with it instantly, and it's been a constant throughout her life. And it's been interesting to explore her journey to becoming Gothic Decay and the process by which she deconstructs her work and how she constructs her work. And that's what we cover in this conversation. Ruth's quite an introverted person. She doesn't necessarily put herself out there very much. And I think we explore that concept a bit more in the second part of the interview, which will be out next week. But she's a fantastic talent, and I love the direction her work's taking. If you've not seen her on Instagram, she's Gothic Decay. If you like things like The Last of Us, if you like your work to be a bit futuristic, you'll enjoy Ruth's work. It's beautiful, poignant, and quiet. And yeah, we have a great chat, so I hope you enjoy listening to it. Thanks to everybody who is listening. I want to do a cheeky shout out to the fine fellows at Watkins Paving and Landscapes Limited, based here in Crewe. If you want your landscapes doing by these boys, they're fantastic. It's not really the sort of content you expect on a needlework podcast, but randomly I know that they listen. So hi, boys. Hope you're having a good day. And indeed, if you enjoy the show, any of you, whether you work in the landscape sector or any other sector, it'd be amazing if you can hop onto your podcasting platform and just leave a little review to say how much you enjoy it, because that helps spread the word, which makes me feel all good inside. Anyway, I'll be back next week with the second part of Ruth's conversation. So for now, enjoy the show. Let's talk about the urban decay that is your workspace there, because you're having some work done, right?
Just a little bit, yes. We've moved into a very, very broken house,
right?
Which is lovely, but the words "in need of modernization" have never been more true.
I was looking at places, because even though I own my own house and have lived in this one for, like, it'll be 3 years in April or whatever, I'm still looking on Rightmove like a guy who's still looking at Tinder when he's just got engaged or something. It's dreadful. It's a dreadful habit to have. But you do. You see those ones in need of modification and you think, okay, that looks like a bargain. Imagine the potential of that. But then I know I don't have any capacity for that. Have you guys got capacity? Are you pretty tasty in the DIY then?
James is good at it. My husband's good at it. But he just has a go at most things that won't kill him, really. So he doesn't tend to play with electrics or gas.
Right.
But other than that, and roofs, things that are kind of important if they go a little bit squiffy. But he'll have a go at most things, yeah. But he's got quite a lot on at the moment. So things are progressing slowly. And anyone we've got to help us has been a bit and hasn't turned up. So. Things are progressing more slowly, but we have half a bathroom and half some heating now, so that's very exciting. And a kitchen. And a shower, more importantly. We spent about 6 months without a shower, so that's good.
We call that the funky era. It is hard. I mean, I've done like plumbing courses and stuff. It's not easy to try and tackle some of that stuff yourself. You've got to know what your limits are, I think, haven't you?
Yes, yeah. I think he's pretty good at that. I think it's like, that looks a bit like a serious pipe. I won't poke that one. But
are you more of a sort of strategic director?
Find a grown up.
Do you sort of like just stroke your chin and go, can you make that thing happen?
Oh, no. I'm not like that at all. He's more kind of into that sort of thing. I'm quite, leave it as it is. It'll be fine.
It'll inspire me. I can feel a new series of works coming on based on Half a Bathroom, the Half a Bathroom series.
Yes. Washing in a sink this big for 6 months or so. Thankfully, not in the winter. They fixed it before then.
Yeah, right. Yeah. My next door neighbour's a builder and it's like cobbler's boots in his house because he's put an extension on. But last year they didn't have heating downstairs and it was just like triple dressing gown situation and stuff like that. I think this year he's pulled his finger out. So fair play to him. We were just like, you can come round and be in our house. Like, we don't have the heating on, but our house is still warmer than their house because it's like fully sealed and all that sort of stuff. So I admire that. I've got a question for you then. Age 6, you cross-stitched a snowflake and now gothic decay. Discuss. Nice and easy.
Oh, journey in a nutshell. Okay, in primary school, we were given a cross-stitch snowflake to do as a little, let's get the children to do something creative. Mm. Mine was wrong. Mm. I decided in my infinite wisdom to put a space between each of the stitches. So instead of cramming the cross stitches next to each other, I kind of, it was this kind of crazy thing. Then all through school, because you're on pocket money and that kind of thing, and kits are expensive. Mm-hmm. So I just sew whatever I could get my hands on. So if anyone I knew had an embroidery magazine, I'd do all the not really very lovely kits on the front of them, mm-hmm. because it was at least something to stitch.
Mm. Did the bug get you like straight away? Were you just like, oh, I really like this then?
Yeah. I think I was maybe 5, 6 o'clock, whatever that is, 5, 6 years old, something like that. And yeah, that was it. So any birthdays and Christmas, all I'd ask for was embroidery kits and things like that. And when I was about 17, I met my now husband, and I used to give him everything I made. So I started putting stencils in because I wanted to be a pathologist, not an artist. Mm. Slight career change. I started, just giving him whatever I'd made. So I'd colour in stencils with stitch and beads and whatever I could find because I had no art background at all, so I wouldn't know a pencil if it poked me in the eye. Mm. His parents or his mum, his father was a professional wood sculptor.
Right.
And so she said to me once, why don't you do this for a living? And I went, ha, don't be stupid. Oops.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Dear readers, I married him.
Yes. So then I became, as my framer used to call me, the birdie lady. So I used to stitch, I stitched whatever I could find and then stitched British birds. And then suddenly one day I went, what am I doing? I mean, I like birds, but I don't love birds. Mm. So let's try and work a way of making something I like. So we lived in a narrowboat at the time, and I was doing a piece of work, and I thought, I'm fed up with this. And so I got a knife, and I just chopped it all into pieces, and then wondered what the person walking past looking into the window was thinking.
Didn't walk back.
So I sewed it all back together, and then it all appeared, as you now see.
Mm.
So, snowflakes to cutting up fabric with knives.
you did textiles at GCSE, is that right?
That's right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So I guess there was some kind of like school support. Like what without giving your age away, like what time are we talking? GCSEs.
I'm 1994.
Right.
My GCSE year.
Right. God, that makes me feel I went to uni then. That's not good, is it? because I'm just trying to think back to my own experience. I mean, I know that there was like design and stuff was still kind of a thing. I mean, I don't know how much it is now, but I mean, did you find you were obviously able to carry on with the stitching within a school context?
I was just obsessed. I just used to do it all the time. And in my GCSE, there was only, you had to choose three modules. You had to do three sort of projects, for want of a better word. And only one of them could be embroidery.
Right.
So I ended up making a pattern of a bizarre frilly knickered chicken as one of the projects. And what was the other one? Oh, my father was a vicar, and I made him a stole with kind of applique work on it. And it's only as an adult I realised, looking back, that I'd just done a big flaming cross, which perhaps wasn't ideal.
Dad didn't really show that one off too much at work.
He didn't wear that one. No, I was a little bit upset. One of the projects that went, one of the embroideries that went horribly wrong, I decided to try and make a cool dragon. But it kind of ended up looking like the worm from the Mist Men books.
Okay. I like that.
Suddenly you get that, oh dear. Well, that's going in the bin.
Yeah. I'll keep working on that dragon. There's an episode of Bluey about that. It's specifically that as well. That's another phrase that comes up a lot in me these days. I don't expect you to be Bluey familiar on account of, I know you've got cats and not kids. I don't know whether the cats would be into Bluey, but for me there's a lot of lessons there. And there is one, whenever kids can't draw, it's about being able to draw and just putting in the practice and all that sort of thing. But it is specifically about dragons. Did any of your friends do needlework?
Ooh. No.
Right.
No, I just used to sit. I think part of it is because we all used to sit together as a family in the evening. And Mum and Dad would be in charge of the television zapper, mm-hmm. or at the time, as the youngest child, I would be the one in control of pressing the button.
Yeah, Channel 4.
To make the telly change.
Channel 4 thing.
I've forgotten the question now. I was reminiscing about pressing the button. Where was that going?
Just about, yeah. So you would just do it at home because nobody else did.
Yes.
It to be at home.
We'd be watching things I had absolutely no interest in. So we'd sort of just listen to it like the radio, in effect, whatever it was, you know, Sister Wendy Beckett chatting on about some bit of art that you'd never heard of or something, and you just sew in a way to keep your hands and mind busy while you didn't really have any interest in Sister Wendy Beckett. Not that there's anything wrong with, I'm sure she is a lovely lady, but...
Not when you're seven.
I didn't want to... No, it's exactly...
It's not exactly like... Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles now, is it? Let's face it.
Well, not that I've seen recently.
Teenage Mutant Renaissance.
You never know.
Pre-Raphaelite Turtles. It's fascinating, I think, when someone catches, you know, when someone falls in love with something so hard, so early. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like there's no way really you could have been anything else if you were going to be true to yourself. I mean, do you have, other than listening to the kind of music that makes your nose bleed, have you got any other passions that have really been this kind of lifelong?
No, because despite going through various periods of hating embroidery and wishing I'd never started doing it as a job, I always end up coming back to it. It's like a sort of pull somewhere that you know, you don't do it for a month and you go, right, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going to do crochet and I'm going to make patterns and I'm going to do all of this stuff. And then about a few weeks in, you start thinking, I could do some stitching. I shouldn't hate it so much.
And can you pinpoint what it is that you love so much about it?
No, not really. I find it very difficult to find things that I like in terms of the world of art, and I know that makes me sound really, really, I don't know. I could, you know, you go into a museum and you see all these wonderful pieces of paintings and wonderful pieces of art and you think, well, okay, you know, they're very clever, but I wouldn't put it on my wall. And I find it very difficult to find things that I would put on my wall. So I find it difficult to get inspiration from other sort of styles of work because I don't hunt them out and I don't look for them, which is my own problem. I don't pop my head up and go, darling, I'm an artist. I must have a look at everything you do. And no, I'm not like that at all.
But that must have been quite interesting then when you were being the birdie lady, because presumably, although you liked those birds, those weren't necessarily in sync with the sort of stuff you wanted to put up on your wall. Or were they?
No. Right. No, exactly. They were, I wouldn't say chocolate box, but I mean, they were just little birds doing little bird things. And like you say, birds in the garden, very pretty, lovely listening to all the birds this morning. I do like birds. It's not a I hate birds rant at all, but I don't love them enough to want to know where all their feathers are and how wonderful they are and spend 20 years sewing another bird.
Yeah, no, I'm the same. Another I like bird. Country cottages and I like kittens, but I don't really need to cross stitch them. It's all right, thanks. You know, I think that's fair, isn't it? That's fair because we're all different people. It's all of those things. So when you first did your stabby into the thing, then that was obviously the part of, was it just like some moment of realization or a moment of release or something? Or was it still quite an incremental process of going, all right, I'm going to move in this kind of grungy direction? I wrote in my notes, I wrote, when did the grungy leaning start? Because it feels like you just dragged in that direction.
Yeah, well, I leaned for a while and then nearly fell off the boat, so I kind of walked back the other
way. Important. Don't lean far on a boat. Yeah.
I remember very distinctly getting more and more fed up with doing birds, and I got halfway through a blue jay's head, and I thought, what's the, insert your word of choice here, point, and threw it in the fire.
Right.
And then I had another little chaffinch, and I started looking through all the stuff I'd made, and I was starting to throw it all in the open fire. And James was like, no, save the chaffinch, save the chaffinch.
Hashtag.
So I then tried to sort of, I was trying to then experiment with trying to make things that I liked. And I don't know, people were doing stuff on tea bags at the time. And I was like, oh, they're a bit more yucky, I'll do that. And oh, everyone in embroidery does flowers, I'll do a flower. I'll do a dead flower. And then the whole love-hate thing, because I'd try something new and it wouldn't work. And then I think, oh, what's the point? I don't like it. Oh, stop doing embroidery. And then I'm going to do embroidery again. And the cycle continued for some years until I found... doing the stabby was just, I don't care, I'm going to throw some blood red dye all over some fabric. Oh, it looks terrible. I know, I'll cut it up and see what happens. I can't be bothered to find my scissors. Here's a kitchen knife. Like that. Mm-hmm. realizing that the passing person was slightly concerned about my sanity, I popped it back down on the table and popped the knife back down and thought, well, I've sort of ruined it now, so I'll stitch it back together. And then I started what I've since called Frankenstein stitching, so taking two pieces of fabric and kind of random stab stitching across them to hold them back together again. And that was the first of the weird pieces that appeared since then.
Because it sounds
started
as though,
gothic decay.
Yeah, it sounds as though it was almost like it's like a fight between what you want to do and what you've been told to do. Because all of the things you're saying, you know, doing birds and stuff, that's the way things should be done. And I guess that was quite a strong storyline for you. And I mean, do you think that is partly because you've been doing it all those years as a kid? You know, and when you were a kid, you get told stuff, and that's the way you think about stuff. That forms your worldview. So in some ways, just the casual consumption of mainstream flowery nice needlework was just like, this is how it has to be, because you didn't know any different.
I think there's a lot of that, and my natural personality is a follower rather than a, you know, creative, let's come up with ideas and let's do something new. That's not me at all. I'm, you know, we must find a recipe book. We must find the way that this food must be cooked. You know, James would be like, oh, bung it in a pan, it'll be all right. And I'm, no, you can't. No, it must be done properly. So it's very, very out of my character to be doing this. And I used to be a member of the Embroiderers Guild in Swansea. And there was a lady there who used to delight in putting down anything I tried to do that was new. And that wasn't very helpful. Trying to get me to make little felt birds and, you know, oh, just cut them out. Don't look at patterns and things. Just cut out a random shape and stick them together and look, hooray, you've created art. And you're like, no, you've created a sort of wonky bird out of felt that looks like a child has sort of dribbled on it. And no, she was trying to help, but it wasn't very helpful because I'm not very confident and outspoken, so I tend to go, oh, okay, I'm doing it wrong. I'll make some felt birds, okay.
So when you said that you would make a thing and then you'd kind of go off it and you'd cycle back through that again, is that almost like you having those versions of conversations just with yourself? Just going, I've made a new thing. I don't really like that thing. No one's going to like that thing. I'm going to stop doing this and go back to the old ways. But is that like part of your process
in my head.
Now, do you think?
I have a tendency to, I'm trying to think of a good way to put this. Up until recently, between us, we were very, very broke.
Mm-hmm.
Very broke. You know, minimum wage between us was way, way out of our league. You know, serious, like, lack of money.
Mm-hmm.
No heating, no holidays, no car, no nothing like that. And so in order to try and make embroideries that worked, I'd try something new and then I'd kind of copy the same formula. Because it needed to work and I needed to get it up and I needed to point at it and go, please buy this, otherwise I can't eat. which wasn't a very successful way of doing things. But we're quite lucky. James has had some very good things with his work, which has been very nice, and it's taken the pressure off
mm-hmm.
having to make that money from it. So you can now go, what I've always wanted to do is spend hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and weeks and weeks and weeks sewing one thing and then throwing dye and ink and rubbish all over it and going, ta-da! And it makes no financial sense because you're not going to, I don't do the marketing side of it because I'm hiding in my cave all the time, can't pop up and go, here, £500,000, do you want one of these? Because it's not going to happen. So I can now make the things I want to make and spend hours carefully stitching stem stitch after stem stitch after stem stitch, all racked up together, and then pointlessly throw things all over the top so you can't see half of it anymore. Because I obviously don't have enough, I have too much spare time, it would seem.
You've got the luxury of time, haven't you? I think that's what's quite nice. It almost feels when you're making the things, because there's a real deliberateness to the way you stitch, isn't it? You take your time, you place your stitches, you're very careful about that. Then you go and make a mess out of it, to use like your own words. But do you have a little word with yourself before you're about to, is it always that way? It's always like there's stitching, then there's like the deconstruction and the reconstruction and all that. And do you have to like slowly have lots of small words with yourself in order to just get to the end of like one of those pieces?
Oh yeah, yes. It's my biggest problem is my own head getting in the way. And so the buildings I was doing before were all patched pieces, and then I'd machine stitch outlines and then ink and paint and add bits on the top. There wasn't much hand embroidery because it was too time consuming to financially be useful,
mm-hmm.
shall we say, at the time. So I missed doing all the hand embroidery. That was the thing I loved doing. But my own mind likes to do it in a neat and tidy fashion where everything is lined up and in a straight sort of perfection kind of thing. Well, mm-hmm. not perfection, but, you know, straight and nice as you can get it. But ultimately, then it's boring to look at. So I then want to do something with it to mess it all up.
I think it's really interesting. Like the work's so good. I haven't even complimented you on the work, but it is so good. And it's so like, it's just like, it's like apocalypse, isn't it? It's just like, it's places and things, but there's anger and tension and craziness and chaos and order and all of those things. Like, it's such dramatic work. Like, it's really interesting to hear you say that you go through these like insecurities and stuff, because you still get them out, you still come out and you still bang them out and you still get them done. So regardless of how you feel about yourself, you're creating these like energetic, chaotic pieces of excellence.
Aww, well, that's very kind of you to say so. It's to me, it gets in the way. I'd be a lot more productive if I could shut my mind up and get on with it.
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't think, like, I it's weird. I don't know who you're comparing yourself to, because it feels like your process is your process and you do the things the way you do the things. And that's why you make what you make. Because if you did it a different way, it wouldn't be like Gothic Decay. It wouldn't be your thing. Do you know what I mean?
I suppose that's kind of true. I hadn't really thought about it like that. It's, you know, it's very easy to compare yourself to the perfection of Instagram or whatever it is and just think, oh, why do these always work? And why do they always look so wonderful? And why are their photographs so good? And how did that bit of cherry blossom land on that embroidery hoop so perfectly?
Yeah, right, yeah. On the 100th try. Yeah.
But yeah, so I've seen people on the train, you know, taking quick selfies of, oh, I'm on the train, and they've spent the entire journey of a good hour getting the right, oh, I'm on the train selfie. That's not me.
Yeah, no.
I'm a bit more of a, here's a quick, not very good photograph of it. Do you want it or not?
But I think it's just, yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? And we all do it. You're quite right. We all compare ourselves to other people and we all see what other people are doing and assume they must be doing a better job of it. But there'll be people that look at your stuff and will have exactly the same version of insecurities because they won't know, they won't see, you know, there's no way that you, it's not like you video your inner dialogue or whatever. So I just think it's interesting because I think people's processes are what they are. And if they change, you know, if all of a sudden you were like, yeah, and you're playing like Don't Stop Believing every month, like your work would just change and it would be a different thing and it wouldn't be like your art. Maybe.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Let's talk about the process, because you do a lot to do. You kind of often use photographs as a sort of starting point. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, that's right. Yes. I'm in a particularly chirpy phase at the moment of nuclear disasters.
Brilliant. Chirpy Chernobyl.
Always a... Exactly. It's always makes you fit in at an embroidery group.
Yeah.
Somebody did actually... This is not, I hasten to add, a nuclear disaster piece, but one of the ladies did come up to me in the guild and said, you know, you're the only person I've ever known put blood spatter in an embroidery. Aww. Aww. Thanks.
Yeah, that's the nicest thing I've heard all day.
I know. Oh. yeah. So yes, chirpy phase. But I've got a piece on the go. This must be the fourth time I've tried to make it work. That's a piece based on some music. So that's because I was going through a doing pieces based on music phase.
Right.
So it's still in the going because, as I say, it's been taking so long to actually make it work, but it's getting there now. And it will have blood spatter all over it.
Yeah. I mean, do you keep your iterations? Because they're like, I don't know, I can't think of any specific artists, but you know, like your classic artists would be like, this is a phase, this is a series of works, it's like an evolution. Like, do you hold on to them in that way, or do you feel like some of these works are like not almost for public consumption because it's part of a work in progress thing?
I don't know. I hope anyway, I'm kind of honest about it. If I'm doing like workshops or videos or something, you know, the technique is basically, oh, let's stitch this down. All we need to do is put some stitches until it stops wandering off. It's not, because there's a lot of how, you know, the magic and the mystery of how embroidery has been done and things, and you think, stitch it until it stops pushing off, stops dropping off in front of you. So I don't think I hide much, if that's other than my insecurities, but then I think if I just whinged on about those every day, you'd be like, oh, upload to Instagram. Oh, I'm insecure. Oh, I don't know. No one wants to hear that.
There are different marketing messages. It's true. But yeah, I just wonder, like, because one of the things I wrote down when I was spinning through your work, I was trying to work out whether you're building worlds or whether you're just making individual pieces, whether in your head there's a sort of some big theme that hasn't necessarily been fully realised, but you're starting to get a sense of what's going on there, or whether you're just like, here's an idea, here's an idea, here's an idea, and they're sort of isolated.
They started kind of isolated, and then they sort of ended up, I think, often there's quite a loneliness aspect to it. you know, imagining what a building would be like if you were actually in that ruined building, because the world had all gone to pot and you have to, you know, that's all you've got for shelter. And, you know, what's useful now, for example, you know, I don't know, a diamond ring, pretty pointless, but maybe a tin opener is now, you know, the world's best item or the most valuable thing you could find. I don't know, basic medicines or something like that. So I think there is a kind of, a lot of people say they're either a bit creepy or sort of lonely sort of feeling, which I hopefully try and, that's how they're supposed to be, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's not always what actually happens.
And I mean, that's, because it's quite a bold thing, isn't it, to go, do you know what my needleworks are? They're creepy and they're lonely, and that's quite a decision to sort of take. Was there a point when that felt like that was the way it was going to be, like when you made this kind of transition, or was it more like experimental techniques and trying those things out first and it naturally evolving in that direction? Like, were you being pulled in a particular way?
Naturally going that way, I think, you know. And I've got a list of things that I find interesting in my little book down here. And a few of them are cheerful. but I would never dare do them because I had to sell them, otherwise I couldn't pay the gas bill. I didn't want people to see all the bad things that seem to go on in my head. Well, no, that's not bad. The things that interest me are not generally terribly chirpy. So I didn't think that people would like them. And putting the very first abandoned building out there was really hard because everyone knew me as the birdie lady who would make a nice little cute little blue tit sitting on a rock going, oh yes, hello, I'm a cute little blue tit. And now there's an abandoned building with all kinds of grotty stuff and graffiti all over the wall or something like that. So it did just slowly develop. I mean, there was about 5 years in the middle of bird to gothic decay, I suppose, of just terrible things. I mean, a lot of learning, but that's a lot of learning for 5 years of, and you think, oh, what's the point, I'm never going to be able to do this, and suddenly you think, ah, maybe this is where I want to go. And I suppose because I don't pop up, and I've always been scared of being influenced by the things that were sort of happening at the moment, you know, this latest potion of textile wonder that everyone's using, and now everyone's making bags or books or whatever it is. I've always been scared that I sort of go down that road, so I for some reason just don't look at anything now. I hide from it all, and that's not really very useful because you can learn a lot from what everyone else is doing. But it's been helpful, I suppose, in some ways, but you could probably have taken a few shortcuts by going, oh, she's done there. I'll borrow a bit of that.
I think we all get our heads turned, don't we, with a new idea, or, you know, an artist catches your eye and you really admire their technique and you want to find out about it. But I think, is that not also just part of the journey? You know, trying things, feeling how they fit within what's resonating within you, and either sticking with them or discarding them?
I think it probably is, but I think because I, as I said to you before, I'm kind of a follower rather than a person who comes up with ideas. I was a bit concerned I would follow too much and, you know, make the same things that everyone else was making at the time, I think. So it doesn't really make any logical sense, but
No, it does. It does. But do you know what? So I'm gonna challenge you, if that's all right, because you're not a follower, because you're doing your gothic decay thing, and I don't see that as necessarily following anybody else. I mean, I can see that there are themes, you know, like post-apocalypse. There's lots of resonant kind of stuff for you to kind of lean against or whatever. But maybe that's what's interesting, is that you aren't following anybody, and so therefore the thought of looking at somebody else's work might pull you away from this path that you're treading.
I think that's it. It's a sort of, well, like I say, I realize I would find it very easy to not copy, that's, but, you know, follow. So I mean, like, I know I have to be kind of careful what I say here, but
we can edit it out, so
lockdown was obviously a horrible thing for a lot of people. It made no difference to us because we were always in the house anyway, really. But going outside in the first couple of weeks when there was nobody there was heaven. It was like, it's not like I don't like people. It's not, that's not what I mean. But okay. There's a lot of aspects of the world I'm not that keen on.
Yeah.
And I think that's why the post-apocalyptic stuff kind of appeals a bit more, that, you know, it's not about whether your car is a BMW or a Bentley, or, you know, you've got a promotion at work, or you've got whatever, or this, that, and the other thing. It's a lot more, you become, I suppose, humans together rather than competing against pointless things.
Yeah.
That doesn't...
No.
I don't know if I'm making any sense.
It does make sense. It's the same reason that sometimes people will do, like, the Canadian tundra or something. Do you know what I mean? Like, there are lots of people because where we want to strip away, like, humans as consumers and get back to humans being a part of nature. And sometimes you have to take away all the humans just to allow, say with your pieces, you know, the one-on-one interaction between the viewer and your work is something that strips all of that away. And it does, it kind of will make the person think, how would I react in that situation if everything's taken away? If you strip away my ability to go and Uber Eats a McDonald's, like, what kind of person are you left with? And I think that's quite a profound thing.
Hmm. Yes, you seem to be very good at getting into what my brain is thinking, even if I don't quite know it. So, yes.
That's why they pay me the big bucks.
Well, you do.
Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange. That's NWDL.exchange with any thoughts, comments, or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needleexchange. See you next time.